Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast. I'm Manuel Lemus, the host of the podcast. This is episode 16. And as always, I have Michael Kimson here with me to comment on the on some of the latest happenings in the JavaScript world. Hello, Michael.
Hello, episode Diez y Seis. That's Spanish.
Yeah.
Hola. Hello.
I noticed that you were trying to say something in a foreign language, as always. Well, like, it's always good to right. Oh, it's always good to have you here. We have a few actually this month. We don't have many interesting topics as probably in past episodes, but we're going to move on and comment on a few that we found more interesting. Maybe you could start from seriously.js. Library for video compositing using WebGL. Michael, did you?
You're asking me to start. Are you asking me to start? That's what you're saying?
Yeah, because somehow you had better luck in trying this.
Well, it just could be because I'm better looking. That might be what it is.
Yeah.
But, and speaking of good looking, this was seriouslyjs.org is what we're referring to. Now, I saw this. Manuel actually sent me this a couple days ago and said, hey, it sounds like it would be pretty neat. I've actually seen this a few weeks ago when it was first announced, and it is a video compositing library, JavaScript library, that uses WebGL, but you have to have a web-capable browser that is sitting on top of something that actually has the right graphics chips to use it. I did get it to work at some point, but I can't get it to work now, so I'm going on memory. But
yeah.
It was a live, there were a couple different live, or I say live, streaming videos, and there were a series of buttons at the bottom. As the video was playing, you could change those, click the buttons, and it would apply different effects to that video stream on the fly, whether it was color changes. There were a couple different color and tinting changes, if I remember correctly. There was at least one that would do some actual perspective changes on the video as it was happening.
Yeah.
It was really interesting, but partially because it's one of these that I think probably for another couple of years until we have most browsers supporting the WebGL stuff out of the box, it's still just kind of a neat hack for
yeah.
public stuff.
Well, I tried it here on a computer that has a graphic card with 3D capabilities, but probably I need to install something that I could not figure what it was. But
it might be that you need a nightly of a browser that I seem to remember at some point that I had to that I had tried with a much more current, like a bleeding edge of Firefox or something.
Yeah, it's something browser related, definitely, because I'm on Linux, there are those 3D desktop effects that I can use regularly and do not have to enable anything in the OS. So I suppose OpenGL or something compatible is enabled in the desktop.
Nope.
It's just
this
browser.
Is part of it.
Yeah.
Here it is. I just got it to work. I had to use a Firefox nightly. And I think there was a config setting that I had to set, about colon config. But I do have this working now. And okay, yeah. If you could see this, maybe I could make a video of it and send it to you. It's pretty
yeah.
slick.
Well, I would suppose it would be interesting for the developers to provide a video showing how it would look, but I think they did not cross their minds to do it. But
I don't think they care all that much.
Right.
Like if you've got the hardware and the software to run it, it runs. And if not, well,
yeah.
Showing you a video would just make you say, "Ooh, I don't have that." So
right,
yeah.
Just a teaser.
Yeah, maybe you just shouldn't show some people some things because they'll just get jealous.
Just to motivate you to bother to figure what is the setting that you need to enable
yeah.
in the browser. Well,
yeah,
anyway,
this is nightly Firefox nightly 12.0.A1 from January 11th. And as I checked it, it's actually downloading me a new version, but the version from January 11th did work. So Mozilla or Firefox 12 works, but Firefox 10 doesn't.
Yeah,
there you go.
I think maybe that's what I'm missing. Well, anyway, we're just talking about it. We would not be showing anything, at least because you're just recording audio for now. Maybe in the future you can do a video podcast. with all these resources of Hangouts on Google Plus One. And, just to give an idea, anybody that is interested on these kinds of effects can go to seriouslyjs.org and they can try it there to see if it works on their browsers or figure what it needs to be enabled.
Sure.
Anyway, moving on, another interesting library that I found, at least because it's not usual, it is a Photoshop file parser library. Basically, it parses a Photoshop file and the so-called PSD files, and they can actually extract some metadata from the files. I think I'm not sure if they can actually extract the graphics, the image data from the file, but at least some information about what it contains seems to be what this library does for now. Probably it will do more in the future, but it's always interesting. There is some time ago there was a developer that submitted something similar for PHP, but it actually could extract the images. We are talking about JavaScript, but for those PHP developers that may be listening, they might also want to take a look at such libraries. The only difference is that since PHP runs essentially on the server side, anything that you could do on the browser side, you won't be able to do like what you can using this library. And from what I can see, they have goals to be able to actually show the images that are in the files, the PSD files, eventually separated in layers, and show them eventually in HTML canvas or.
That's a very audacious goal, and I hope they get to it.
I think they did it in PHP, so probably in JavaScript it would not be a big deal. Although PHP has the GD library that can do many things with graphics that may.
Well, I did a little bit of image stuff last year with JavaScript, taking data out of a file, and in some measure, you could do some things with a data resource, and I think it Base64 encoded everything. So some of the browsers can do some of this stuff already, but it's still very largely dependent on your JavaScript engine and your browser. So I have a suspicion that some browsers might always be falling back a little, or falling behind on this. But if they could say, hey, this works in Firefox 11 and Chrome and Safari, that's still going to hit a very large portion of the type of people that would want to use this sort of tool, I think. So.
Right, and sort of saying, nobody using IE anymore. It's amazing that all IE share is decreasing. I don't know if it is something related with the lack of love that Microsoft is getting, whether it's not getting much love.
It's actually a discussion that maybe we should have next time, because I had one of the listeners to this podcast wrote me and asked about .NET developers and why .NET developers don't get more love or get more, I forget what the exact word is, but I guess respect in the design from a front-end designer, front-end developer standpoint. And I may want to clarify with him if he meant design or developer, but it may be an interesting topic to explore, or maybe have him on at some point too, because he's a .NET guy, and I think he feels a bit marginalized sometimes listening to a lot of podcasts. That
I think it's my theory is Microsoft related, although not going to extend this, but just as a side comment, notice that the Nginx, right?
Server, Nginx server, yeah.
Yeah, the server, the share has surpassed the IIS, Microsoft Internet Information Server. It has been decreasing over the years. So whatever is happening in the Microsoft world, it's not as it was in the past. Remember when Internet Explorer used to have a much larger share.
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah. And when it mattered.
Well, we don't know
now. It's not that it doesn't matter at all now, but cross-platform functionality matters a lot more. If only because of mobile devices. You can write something that if it works right in multiple browser and desktop and multiple mobile browsers. If it doesn't work in IE6, I think fewer and fewer people even care. Or even, you know, IE6 is almost a dead horse at this point, but even IE7, it's just not the focus, I think, than it used to be. So, but another topic for another day, probably.
Right. But
I've got one more curve. I have a curveball that I want to throw you in a bit.
Yeah.
That we didn't talk about.
And I just wanted
to. You can choose to do it or not, but we'll carry on the scheduled stuff for a bit.
We'll do it. I just wanted to complement something that is somewhat related with JavaScript, which is the fact that just these days, Apache 2.4 was finally released, and it somewhat implements. It's not exactly it's somewhat the way the Node.js works. It's all based on events, and the goal is to somehow save memory. So now there is a new mode for Apache servers to work that end up be as efficient in terms of memory usage and probably in response speed, and that is similar to what you achieve when you use Node.js. Well, I don't know if that is going to make any difference to any of the listeners, because whoever was already going to that on that train of using Node.js for using it as a web server as well, using the HTTP server object. At least there is some focus, and I wanted to mention this because since I mentioned before Nginx server, this is somewhat related because there is an effort to make the web servers more efficient, and that is the reason why Nginx has been gaining traction. Inclusively, it surpassed Microsoft IIS. And, this is probably a topic that we will get back in the future. And moving on, I don't know if you wanted to bring up that topic or just follow the schedule.
We'll follow the schedule for a bit.
Yeah, well,
so
actually,
you've got your schedule.
Well, we are covering several libraries that we've been looking into lately, and there is just one more, and then you get back to your surprise topic.
Woo!
This just comment a bit about there is a library named textualizer.js, basically just to present text with nice animation effects, not exactly a big deal, but it's always good to show pages with certain effects, and in this case with this textualizer library, it applies some effects to the to letters, make them fade and appear in a different order, and move them to the final positions, and probably this is better understood if our listeners go to the page of this project. It's cairo.me/textualizer. I'll post the link in the show notes, and
sure.
Whoever found this interesting can go there. We had many general purpose animation libraries, but this one is specific for text. And if you want to show some text with nice effects in your pages, you may want to take a look into this library. This was the last that we planned.
Sure. Well, I'm just looking at Textualizer. I'm just watching the animations go by, and it's if not hypnotic, it's still pretty slick to just keep watching. And yet, I probably say this almost every show. Sometimes I feel like I'm getting old.
Yeah.
If we had seen animation like this 10 years ago, certainly 20 years ago on a computer, this would have cost thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, and it would have taken days to render something this smooth. And I'm looking at it here on effectively commodity hardware that you can go to the mall and buy. And I'm just looking and saying, it's neat. I'm continually amazed at how far we've come with software.
Well,
okay, let me take my old man hat off for a moment.
Okay. Now put the hipster hat.
Yes, yes. I'm going to angle it. It's jauntily placed to one side. And I was actually looking for a Hacker News discussion because I saw this. I'll remember what it was. It was a discussion last week because 37 Signals said, hey, we've got the new Basecamp coming out, and here's what we did to make it really, really, really fast. And there's a big discussion on it because apparently, if I read this right, a lot of what they were doing is they've got a lot of AJAX and they've got a lot of caching, but most of the AJAX calls are hitting the server and the server is rendering HTML and they're getting HTML snippets back rather than sending back data structures that are then parsed and processed into new DOM elements or modifying local DOM elements. And that seemed kicked off a whole discussion thread about where should server side or client side, and it touched a nerve with me because I have recently, in the past month or so, started to work a lot more on a client project that has an extreme amount of front end JavaScript, and almost everything you do is reaching back to the server with a JSON request, and it's getting a JSON object back. At one level, hey, that's really slick. That's cool. That's separated. That's SOA. That's whatever. At another level, it's extremely hard to figure out what is going on. Some of it is the way the code is written. Some of it is the libraries that are being used. Some of it's just, if you're trying to figure out why something went wrong,
When you said it renders HTML on the server, what do you mean? Does it return images, graphics?
Oh, well, I think with that 37 Signals article, they're returning just a block of HTML, like an open p tag with some text, then a closed p tag, something like that, or an actual div with the content in it, rather than a JSON object that is then parsed and then a div object is created and inserted someplace. They're just saying, here's the div, here's the HTML for the div, just put it in wherever you want to put it.
Yeah.
In that case, that was where the discussion was, but it really hit me. One of the things that we're actually wrestling with right now, and I'll throw this out because I think we may have a couple solutions coming up, but this has taken far longer than it should have for a number of reasons. But this is an open plea for some help. The framework that we're using, the server-side and client-side framework talking together, deal with anything on the server side which is listed as a date or a time is automatically converted. When the JSON objects are created, they're created as date. Right now, they're created as date objects in JavaScript. So you get a JSON object that says, oh, your start date is, and then it actually is an expression of new date with a timestamp in it.
Yeah.
So that is evaluated in the browser as this is this moment in time. Well, we hit a snag because initially everything was just dates, and the dates were stored as, they were stored as date time, but the time was always midnight. So what was happening is you would get this date object in JavaScript that looked fine in North Carolina, and then when somebody in Kansas looked at it, their browser was interpreting that same new date object as 2 hours earlier. But it was only rendering the date. Yeah. So my date would say February 9th, meaning midnight, and their date would say February 8th, which was really February 8th at 10 p.m. their time. So it's another aspect of...
Because
the client side,
the difference in time zones, right?
Yes, yes, exactly. Because the creation of what it actually means to be a date or a time is happening in the person's browser, respecting their time zones and language and all that kind of stuff. So we've actually been wrestling with this a lot. And compounding that is the fact that this particular project has a need to store dates, just dates, because there is some moment in time during the ordering process when we don't have an associated time with it. So just saying it's this date at midnight doesn't make sense because it doesn't actually mean midnight. We need a null in there for the time, which means that we have to keep these as separate fields. This is kind of getting into non JavaScript-y stuff, but a lot of this was kicked off by there's a lot of processing going on at the client that we don't have ultimate control over, or to the extent we have control, it's just very hard. I upgraded to IntelliJ several months ago, so I'm now used to doing breakpoints all over the place and stopping and doing all this stuff. And thank goodness for Firebug. I'm getting really good at using Firebug, but it's still not as friendly as a full-fledged IDE that lets me do a lot of things. So I don't know if you have any maybe project experience or experience with heavy front-end stuff. I've seen it done right. I guess I can say my friend Rebecca Murphy, well-known for the YayQuery podcast, amongst other things. I worked on one project with her almost 2 years ago now, and she did a fantastic job setting up a dojo project, full unit tests just in the dojo. That was great. That's not what I have right now. I've inherited something that feels largely untestable. I'm trying to still get my arms around it, but it has made me want to retreat back to the safety of the server side and the completeness of server side. I don't know if either you yourself or if you've worked with other people that
dates,
are
dates. I don't think I ever had a problem dealing with dates, but usually it's like you said, I usually deal with that on the server side. And I try to use the ISO format. I don't use I'm not sure what you mean with the problems you had. You say you had a problem dealing with dates because they are represented differently on the browser and the server because of the time zone differences, right?
Yes.
And what was exactly the problem? When you sent the date back to the server, it was not on the same time zone?
The date comes up. But it would come up as a string, and that would get parsed out. But when it would be returned, it was being returned as when it was being sent from the server to the client. It was, and I'd say, I think even right now today, it still is being sent as a JavaScript object, not a string that says 02/09/2001 or 2001-02-09. It's being sent as an expression that says new date. Open parentheses, 165943270000, close parentheses. Like that.
So yeah. The value that is in there, what is it? Is it a timestamp?
It is a, I guess it's a Unix timestamp. I think it's a Unix timestamp. I'm still getting my head around this. And I
well,
say that,
timestamps, you mean, because probably it's serialized in the format of the browser machine uses. Right? No, I don't know, because timestamp. There are Unix timestamps which are not the same in Windows, for instance.
Right, but it's. I think JavaScript engines all associate them the same. I think they all deal with them the same way.
Yeah.
I think.
Well,
but
I never had to deal with that directly, but if it is an epoch value, which is relative to January 1st of 1970. That value is always in the UTC time zone. So you have to format it on the server side, assuming it is on UTC, not on the server time zone, which it is unlikely to be UTC. And that's probably you had 2 hours difference. Because the Unix epoch values are always relative to the UTC time zone. It doesn't matter where you are. And, well, if you are using PHP on the server side, there are, for instance, the functions like str ftime, which formats a timestamp in as text. And then you have several marks to use the time, the day, the year, or the month.
Sure.
In whatever format you want. And there is also the function, which is similar to that one, which is called GM strf time, which formats the same date but in the UTC time zone. But I don't know, it depends what you do with those dates. Ideally, even if you are in a different time zone, I always recommend that you store in your database or whatever in UTC, because it won't matter. Where your server is, what is the daylight savings and stuff like that. But that is something that is to be planned from the beginning, or else you probably have a big headache later to deal with dates in the future. But as long as you use everything relative to UTC, I think it's all right. And I was not familiar what about the what would be the serialization format that JavaScript would use. But now that you mentioned it, it's probably something that is platform independent, and probably it's epoch, which is the an integer value relative to January 1st, 1970, but always in UTC. Well, I don't know. I think you have to try to figure to compare.
It's been an insane mess, actually. I have to say, right. for a bunch of reasons, and we've actually been working on this for more than a month. I'm almost ashamed to say that because anybody listening would say, "What an idiot! You just do blah." But
yeah,
I've had some other people working with me too, and there's a couple of things that come up with that. One is that we're dealing with thousands of files that we didn't write. I'd say none of us on the team wrote this. We've inherited this.
Legacy.
All brand new. And you've got code on the server, and now you've got a lot of code also in the client. So even to figure out where these things are, and there's loads of assumptions that are in the code that just, I'm getting there's probably two dozen places I can think of just off the top of my head in the JavaScript code that say, go grab me this and then do date.parse on it. Well, all of that code is assuming, it's all doing it with native date.parse stuff in JavaScript. It's assuming that everything coming down is in one format. And now when you change that format, every place that uses it now has to go be changed. Or what we need to really do is to put in some sort of a middle abstraction layer, which I was kind of fighting against. I didn't want to do that. I thought we could just fix this. And then it turned into just fix this, just fix this, just fix this. And one of the guys on the team kind of verbally sat me down last week and said, maybe we should try something different. I said, I think I in the back of my head, there's a right way to do it. But this isn't really even JavaScript. This is just engineering software in general. You know that there's a correct way to do it. And I constantly struggle with, do we do it the right way? Which in some ways, I don't know how long the right way is going to take. But if I say I can address this one problem in front of me in 6 hours, that's known. Okay, I can do that. But then you find out, there's something else. And there's one more thing. And it turns into, at some point, it becomes an unknown. Now, all of you out there listening would say, just run all of your unit tests and that will find all your problems.
All right.
to all of you, I say, ha, 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 ha.
It doesn't work that way.
Well, if we had, say, 400 unit tests written around all this, then it would be much more easier. We would have the confidence to make these changes and experiment, and we don't have that confidence. So, anyway, that's a bit of a side topic, but if anybody here has maybe strong thoughts one way or the other about server side versus client side, do you do full apps in the browser, or do you use things like jQuery and Dojo and YUI? Do you use them more for just enhancements? Now I know you and I have talked about that a couple of times in the past year or so. I'd like to hear from more people that have wrestled with that.
Right. I think it's a bit complicated. Now people seem to be tempted to use the browser-side template engines and things like that. But if you need to generate pages that need to be indexed by search engines, because they are public, they have content, and you can use that convention that we mentioned before, the hashbang convention, that you use the hash character for followed by the exclamation mark, and search engines.
That's another, interestingly enough, there was just a topic the other day that Twitter themselves are, I think they were the first big proponent of hashbang syntax, and they're deprecating that. They're going away from having that be their standard default now, so...
Yeah, well, I don't know, but maybe I don't know why they used it in the first place, because they probably did not really need to use it, at least in every case they are trying to handle. That's more when you have an AJAX-based user interface, something that is updated without reloading the page completely, as when you click on a link that goes to the server and fetch the content. Well, but anyway, even when you use that hashbang convention, what happens is that the server will the search engine bot will access your server to fetch a page that removes the hashbang from the URL, and your server needs to be ready to serve the actual content of that page. So if you rely on the browser to render everything, That won't do because the servers will still need to be able to generate the page regardless of where usually the page is rendered. So it won't do for that purpose. Bottom line is that you always have to be able to generate the page on the server side, even if in practice for human users, the browser will render the page.
Sure.
This means that if you use a template engine in JavaScript on the browser side, you probably need to have an equivalent in the server side to render the page exactly the same way. So I don't know if it is worth this duplication of effort. Well, I actually never tried to do that, because I always try to render everything on the server, even when I serve part of content serve via AJAX requests. I still render it on the server and then send the HTML to update whatever are the places of the pages that need to be updated. So the server always knows how to render the page, even if it's split in parts. Anyway, that's probably yet another challenge for those that want to implement fast user interfaces. And the question is it really worth to render everything on the browser side, or you still have to be concerned with the server side?
Well, yeah, we'll bring it up again at some point. Reach out to me or Manuel if you have any strong opinions one way or the other. I'd love to hear your
Everybody
stories.
Can comment on this podcast comment section to tell what are the criteria that each one is using for their own projects. Well, moving on with our podcast, we are going to carry on with one of the regular sections of the podcast, and which is the one on which you comment about the latest classes that were released in JS Classes site. This month, there is a great increase in the number of classes that have been submitted. As I mentioned before, there is now a sort of an incentive, or at least a feedback mechanism that the site is using, which is to send a sort of a report by email telling each author how they are doing, if their classes are having more users, and if they are raising or not in the rankings of authors and stuff. And this sort of been encouraging authors to send more classes to the site, and this seems to be working very well. I hope it continues to be that way. We still need to encourage more authors to come to the site and take advantage of the fact that the site will give you even more exposure to your projects. And this also leads to something that I wanted to comment. By the time we are recording, it was not yet announced, but this month I've been working on something that is about to be announced, which is a sort of enhancement of that report that goes by email, that is also giving feedback to users that are bringing other users to the site. So now there is something that was started actually in the PHP Classes site in 2002, which is the Friends of the Site initiative, which basically meant to encourage every user, not just authors, to send more users to the site, eventually to become contributors. So there is now a page that I'll mention more explicitly in the show notes, that shows a ranking of the users that led more users to the site. And cool. Even to make this referrals mechanism simpler, which requires to just append a few parameters to any URL of the site, so when the users come to the site realizes that it was you that referred. There is if you click on those buttons that are in almost every page of the site, the plus one or the Facebook likes or the tweets, they pass a slightly changed URL to those social networks. So when they appear in your timeline or whatever it is that you use in your preferred social network, the URL contains some parameters that identify that it was you that was referring. So you, this is practically to say that the site is encouraging you to tweet and like and plus one your pages of the site that you think that are interesting. Eventually add some comments of your own and telling why you think that the pages are interesting. And any users that follow your links and come to the site and register, you get a sort of a credit. And you be raising in the friends of the site ranking. And additionally, there also already mentioned that this report that goes by email to top of the site contributors tells you how you are doing, how many users that you have led to the site and registered, and also if any of those users have submitted a new class. So if you know anybody that did not submit a class to the site, but you think could submit the class and benefit the whole community, you can just pass a URL. It will be explained in more detail how it is formatted. When that person comes to the site and if he registers and submits a class, you'll be credited for that. And this is just a way to give an incentive for more and better classes to be submitted to the site. And there will be an article talking more about this. By the time we are recording, it was not yet published, but it will be until this podcast is live. So now, getting back to what we are going to do, Michael, which are the classes, objects that you would like to mention?
First, we'll look at Simtaco. Hope I'm saying that correctly. Simtaco. This is from Hensel Hartmann from Switzerland. I wish I could say something in the Swiss, but I don't know how to say anything. Hello. Pretend I was an Englishman in Switzerland, and I would say hello. That's as good as a foreign language as I can do right now.
Right. They know English in Switzerland.
Okay. but this project is interesting. It's actually, that's where the taco comes from. This is a port of Taconite. That was a Taconite plugin. And this is a way, and it actually talks, or kind of touches on what we were talking about before. And this is a way of doing fast AJAX calls back and forth from client to server. The notes that Hensel mentions here are, this can be used to send unlimited options to the server, and it can also bind. It works on demand and not by listener. You can read a little bit more about that, but it looks like Hensel is one of those guys that is using heavy AJAX to build strong client-side UIs and very complex interactions, exactly what's causing me a lot of problems right now. So I can respect the work that's gone into something like this more so because I've been recently having to deal with a lot of the pain of dealing with something. And it's not to say that what I'm dealing with, it's bad, it's garbage, it's just, it's very large and it's foreign to me. I just wanted to get out that. I'm not trying to bash the guys who came before me on the project. They accomplished quite a lot, but anyway, back to Simtaco. I didn't quite get what the taco name came from first, but it's a port of a Taconite plugin.
Right.
That was the first one. I mean, I have a couple others I could mention, but if you want to chime in or if you want to go back and forth, we could do that.
Well, I didn't test this in practice. I usually review most of the code to figure what it does, but the idea is to provide that effect that we see on Facebook that updates pages gradually.
The Taconite plugin itself is a way of coordinating and effectively kind of registering multiple callbacks or multiple events to happen based on one AJAX call. So you can do one AJAX, say, get me this status, but from that, and this is what Simtaco does as well too, that you can configure, here are three things that should happen based on this update, or five things, rather than tying each one, each thing that you need updated to its own AJAX call. You can bundle them together. That's really the core of it.
Right. Well, the idea is to that you'll be able to update different parts of the page, just like you see on Facebook and the other sites. And well, for now that's all I can say, but you were going to mention other objects that you want to comment.
Excuse me. Well, another one is from our good friend Artur Sosens from Latvia. Good morning, Artur, or good afternoon, or good evening. I mentioned something that he had done in the last podcast, and yeah. He did it again. And that was this class is actually something that's built specifically for the Titanium Accelerator framework. And this is a timer countdown that you can apply to labels in Titanium. So you can make a label and throw this countdown object on it, and it will count, do a timer countdown for you. In and of itself, nothing overly complex, not like the SimTaco before, but just the fact that it's a plug-in that's designed around the Titanium framework is, I think, at this point, you know, still worthy of note.
Right. Well, it's one more object, like we mentioned in the past episode, that one of the snowflakes. It's basically to demonstrate what you can do in JavaScript, and then using the Titanium framework to generate applications for mobile devices and whatever are the platforms supported by the Titanium project. And this is interesting. Actually, I've been talking with Artur, considering the development of an eventual application for the site. In this case, JS classes, but it would be practically the same for PHP classes, which they share the same code base. When I was trying to figure how much work would be involved, because looking at these objects, it seems simple. But then there are details which are device specific that do not work the same way. And from what I could gather, Titanium provides different APIs for different devices, even though the purpose of those APIs are somewhat overlapping. And basically, this means that you would need to write device-specific code depending on the platform you are targeting. So despite all, it is all simple, it's all in JavaScript, you still have to make some device-specific effort to take advantage of the specific features of the devices. And also asking him about PhoneGap, if he had tried it. He basically told me that it's very slow because it runs all on top of a proxy. So the actual calls to the system are to communicate with a proxy, which is in the device to... I don't know, I understood that it was to render the user interface and things like that. So he was not very amused by PhoneGap. well, probably Titanium is more efficient, but you may need to perform more device-specific development. Well, I haven't tried this. I would like to have more time to do it, but right now I'm already really buried in many other things that I want to develop first. And although it would be nice, I don't know if I'm going to go ahead and develop an actual application. Well, it depends on all the purpose. Maybe I reconsider it later. But for now, just to give an idea. But carrying on, what other...
I had one more that I was thinking about mentioning. And I'll mention it by name, but there's another one that's actually caught my attention a little more. jQuery, the first one is by just Jason, jQuery storage or handle storage. So plugin he's written to do the handle storage. But, and this is not to knock handle storage, but there's one that has struck me as I'm going to try this out on a project. That's Reflect Object. And this is a pretty minimal class that lets you... reflect in a way kind of like vardump or printr on PHP, but it's actually with vardump and printr and PHP you typically just get the values. This reflect object in JavaScript will give you all of the properties but all of the methods as well on an object, and as useful as I find Firebug to do a lot of that for me, sometimes even just finding all of the values that I'm looking for in the Firebug tree gets a little convoluted. And I'm going to play with this and see if this would be a good thing to help. Because there are times when I know at this when I get to this point in the code, I want to be able to see what's going on here.
Yeah, you mean the reflect object, right?
Yes, Reflect Object, yes. And that is, I forgot to mention his name. Who's that from? That's from Tom Schaefer in Germany. So, Auf Wiedersehen, Tom.
Guten Morgen. Tom has been a regular contributor of both JS classes and PHP classes. And
Hassenpfeffer, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he always sends nice classes to the site. I hope he can continue to do it as well. And any other class, or is this the last you wanted to comment?
Well, that's the last I wanted. I want to hear what you're going to talk about a bit.
Well, I also picked a few because since this month we have more than usual, and also we had more time to talk about this. Classes. I also picked three of them. One of them is also from Arthur Sossin's, this lightning effect, which is quite impressive. Did you see this in practice? So the
I didn't see it run. I saw there, the
if
demo.
You go to the related links section, there is a link that says class documentation, but you also can see live examples. And it's quite impressive because it renders sort of a lightning bolt array that it's very similar, and it uses Canvas to render that bolt, all the randomness of the lightning, and it is very interesting because it gives a very impressive effect, and it can help to capture the attention of your users if you use this in a page that you have in your site. And this
that's
is very
slick,
interesting.
Yes.
And again,
I like the mouse one. When you move the mouse around, that's pretty cool.
Right. It seems that it's kind of killing somebody with electricity if you drag the mouse around while you click.
Yes.
Yeah. And well, this is one of the few that I wanted to comment. This month we had already 10, we're practically doubling the rate of contributions of the months in the past, but we don't have time to comment all of them. I'll just comment on a few. Other than this one of the lightning effect, I also want to comment of this one, a file drop from Pavel from Russia. It basically developed a way to handle drag and drop from your desktop to your browser, so you can drag files by their icons into your browser and have them uploaded. So this object allows you to register all sorts of callbacks to figure the progress of the all events since you start dragging and dropping and then starting uploading and when it finishes the upload. So it's quite complete for those that are interested on things like this, dragging and dropping files from the desktop into the browser for uploading purposes. And the other one that I also want to comment, another one, this one is from Daniel Martinez from Spain. It's actually a nice example of implementing a very simple game, which is basically a puzzle. It takes an image and splits in several parts and shuffles those parts. So you need to click on a mouse to make the parts move until the puzzle is all sorted. And it's very interesting because you can use this to learn how to or to implement a very simple game of dragging all the images around in a canvas, and this could be used as an example of how to implement all sorts of games that require to move graphics around.
He is using a Simpsons picture.
Eesh.
Now does no, he have? Oh yes, I don't know. Are you going to get shut down by SOPA down in Brazil for that?
Not yet, but I think at least I can get the MCA takedown request. But yeah. I always comply, so anyway, maybe I should ask the author to to please change the picture before whoever owns the rights to Simpsons.
Fox is going to come knocking at your door.
I'm going to be foxed.
Can you say that?
Fox. On your, Fox. Well,
okay. Oh, Foxed. Okay. Yes. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
That's bad.
Well, I think that this is all for now. You had many other classes that we could comment, but we don't have time to comment on all of them. Some are more interesting than others, but we covered quite a few. I hope you, the authors continue to send more of these nice classes so we can keep talking about them. And now moving on to our final section, I'm not sure, Michael, do you ever it ready to comment on the upcoming topics of the JS Mag magazine?
Well, hopefully, yes. We had something last month that had to get we had some technical issues, but we've got local chap Matthew Bass will be has a piece for us on using EJS templating, JavaScript templating in Rails. So it's kind of a Rails JavaScript combo. Mike Schwartz is continuing his series on server-side JavaScript with Silk.js. He's been running this series for a while. Silk.js is a project he's been working on. He details different aspects of that every month. We've got an article on specific jQuery plugin development project of the prompt menu plugin that's out there for jQuery. And there's a couple other things we may be having as well, but I haven't got confirmation on those yet.
No.
As usual, I will throw out, I'm going to be a bit more specific this time because I've said, hey, we're looking for somebody if you want to write something, if you're interested in that. I should also say David Calhoun every month does our news. He does a great news roundup, and he does a somewhat sporadic, he's turned it into a podcast as well. He does usually a JavaScript news roundup for us every couple of weeks on the blog, JS Mag blog, and he often does a audio reading of all that as well. So if you want even more JavaScript news, you can listen to David Calhoun at jsmag.com/blog. Wanted to give him a shout out because he does a great job on that.
Right.
But one of the things I was going to ask for is, rather than just saying, hey, if you want to write about something, you know, let me know. That's always there because I've met some great people through this podcast, people reaching out saying, hey, I'd like to contribute. I got this, I got that. I specifically would like to hear from people that would like to do some longer ongoing columns of some sort, whether it's mobile development with JavaScript or perhaps maybe even JavaScript optimization, JavaScript security, app security with JavaScript, or things like a titanium column, something like that. Something that would be more than just here's one article on how to do something, but where you could explore different angles on that topic every month, a regular column. I would like to hear from anybody that's interested in doing that. Because I think some people, actually, I was talking to somebody last month about writing, and he had a topic, and he called me after a couple of weeks, and he said, well, there's too much here. I don't know where to stop. I don't know what I should put in and what I shouldn't put in. And that was actually probably a better candidate for a series or a column on mobile JavaScript stuff. So
yeah.
If that's on your mind and you'd like to talk to me about that, reach out to me, Michael at jsmag.com, and we can make that happen.
Right. By the way, talking about mobile, did you already start with the articles of Arthur Sossin on titanium? He was asking me about topics on that.
Yeah. He and I have not, we did, we talked kind of on and off about that. We haven't formalized anything yet, but that would be, I think, certainly a good use of his brain power if he has the time commitment. I'd love to get an ongoing titanium series from him.
Right.
Or anybody else that would like to contribute. It doesn't have to be our tours.
Yeah, right. Actually, he was asking me about what kind of things I would be needing to develop an eventual JS classes or PHP classes app for mobile using titanium. And actually, what I was trying to figure is how to, for instance, get notifications into the device, the more efficient way.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are push notifications, but what would be the way to implement them, because it will probably be different between platforms. And there are more platform-specific, more efficient ways to do using platform-specific code. And that would be one thing. Another thing is to have an application that is actually a background service that is listening to something, and it is not showing anything to the user, but it may trigger some device notifications, so the user knows when something of his interest is happening. And I was telling him about this, but nothing specific, just to get notifications from the site, things that may be relevant to the actual user that is accessing it. And it seems it can be done with Titanium, but it's not so obvious, because you may require platform-specific code, as I mentioned. And I think if he or somebody else starts it from there, it would be already useful to have a series of articles on that.
I think it would too. So we should reach out to Arturus and say, write this.
Yeah, if he has time, right?
Yes.
I understand he's very busy with his own startup, but he's very willing also to contribute, and that is always great. Well, basically, this concludes our podcast. I hope you can continue to have much more of this to talk about in upcoming episodes. Other than that, Michael, thank you again for coming. Your insights are always helpful and give people a lot to think about. And
I know.
You are very humble, but you know.
I know that too, yeah.
Okay, for my part, that is all for now. Bye.
Thank you very much. I will talk to you later then. Bye-bye.